I'm going to ask that we all bow our heads in prayer.
Just start rattling off all the bad things I've done till you get tired of hearing about it, or what?
I'm going to talk to you about the judge of the fatherless.
I'm sure he doesn't mean to be so difficult, Mrs. Cleaver. It's just that he's at the age where he doesn't realize how important it is to keep a promise.
Which Bible story do you want to hear? Is this a Sunday school?
Thanks, Dad.
Well, welcome to the Faith of the Fathers podcast, where we are reigniting the calling of men in the world. My name is Carl Gessler. I'm your host. And I said we today because in the studio with me today is my wife,
Susie Gessler,
and former co-host. She was with us before the scandal and she had to disappear and get that taken care of. She's on parole. Glad to be with us again. Glad that you're with us again, Susie.
It's good to be back.
Yes. I'm just kidding. For those of you new to the podcast.
It's okay. Let them think what they want to think.
The podcast was better with Susie, but Susie is too busy for me. And so I've invited her today to talk about our marriage problems. Susie, why don't you have enough time for me?
Because I'm busy taking care of your six kids, Carl.
Oh, that's right. Actually, we've changed the podcast since Susie was on it last. We used to call it The Gospel for Planet Earth, and just trying to focus a little bit more. We've been focusing on the faith of the fathers. So we've been focusing on the effect of godly fathers and the effect of a lack of godly fathers, and also trying to learn from the fathers of our faith. So we've had a more masculine aura about the podcast, which is why my beard has grown. I didn't even know what was happening. It just started growing as I talked about masculine things.
And since I'm trying to avoid growing a beard, I naturally didn't want to be around. So what you're saying is that...
And naturally, I didn't want you around for
so
that
you're
time
just
either.
Saying you just didn't... It really has nothing to do with me and my parole. It really has everything to do with
my masculinity.
You not wanting me around because of my femininity.
Right, and I don't want you to have a beard at this moment.
I think they have names for people like you, Carl.
Well, Susie, I invite you on not because of your extensive vocabulary, but because as a family missionary, you know, like the today's episode is about what we're about to embark on as a family and taking your family along, because I'm a guy who loves adventure and accomplishment and big things.
And I'm a girl who likes to stay home.
Yeah, and I married you, which means that sometimes I can't do the things that I would do by myself if it was just me. And I have to think about you. The labor.
I know.
The work. The work.
I know. You suffer.
Yeah. You can tell.
Poor baby.
So why don't we start by going a little bit back in our story, Susie. You married me.
What is this for, by the way? You asked me to do a podcast and I came in and we're looking at a camera.
Oh, but we do a podcast on a camera. She's really in the dark, folks.
Yeah. I barely know how to turn my phone on and off. So.
Yes. Well, the last time we were doing podcasts, we weren't doing video too, but we are now. So newsflash for Susie. I think
okay.
The rest of you knew that. So we're going to go back because Susie and I have been married almost 15 years. It'll be 15 years this May.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank
to us.
You. You too.
We've known each other a lot longer than that. And I would say we've always liked each other, even if it wasn't in a romantic sense. We've always enjoyed each other.
Yeah.
But we got married, and what were your expectations for marriage, being married to Carl?
I got married to Carl thinking at the age of 21, thinking that he was going to have a career painting houses like his dad and his brothers.
An illustrious career.
That we would be a working middle-class family and have a bunch of kids and homeschool them and garden and probably join a church or host a Bible study at our house.
Hmm. Which, I mean, that's kind of how it was to begin with.
That kind of is how it is.
Yeah, I guess that is true.
Maybe we don't do everything to the full scale or capacity that I thought we would, but we do all of that.
Yeah. So about 12 years ago, we went on a mission trip to New York City. And that was...
actually, about 13 years ago, because January is almost here when we went.
Oh, wow. So 13 years ago. And that was something... It was in my heart since I was 18 to travel and lead worship. We had a trip planned the year after my dad died. The summer after my dad
died. As in him and his brothers.
Correct.
Not me. We weren't married yet,
and that would have been immoral.
It would have been immoral to be on a trip together.
Right.
Technically
I'm embarrassed. Anyway, we were going to go on a trip together, me and my brother and I. We're going to go lead worship. And the doors were open. People were going to have house concerts and stuff like that. And because of finances, I chickened out. And I just was, because we were struggling to make the business work with dad gone. And anyway, a year passed. Susie and I were now married, and I felt like I owed it to God to do, you know, he had opened the doors and I just didn't go through them. And so we went. It's a great experience for me. I thought it was very adventurous on the streets of New York City. We were actually there the day that the plane made the emergency landing in the Hudson River. Mm-hmm. That was all very memorable. And afterwards, I just wanted to do it again. I think Susie was a little like, what?
And I was just glad it was over and thought it was an interesting trip.
Yeah.
And I didn't think anything else was going to come of that. I never knew about this, like, traveling evangelistic worship desire that you had.
The next month we ended up going to Mardi Gras to do street evangelism, which was another really growing experience, a lot of stepping out of our comfort zone and stuff like that. And the bottom line is we continued to travel on and off throughout the year, sometimes for a month at a time, sometimes for a couple weeks. Sometimes we'd be gone for 2 weeks, come back for a month and be gone for another 2 weeks. We've done this now in various forms for 13 years. We've been to 49 states. Hawaii is the only one we have not been to. But that is the journey of doing this. The whole time we've added a kid pretty much every 2 years to our train on the road. And we have had to learn to adjust to each other in that time. Knowing what each other's needs are. What were some of the really tough parts for you when I'm dragging you across the country? What were the times where you're like, I don't know, were you ever ready to kill me? Oh, darn. Okay, well, tell me about some of the times when you were ready just to...
Okay, so the hardest times for me are probably when I'm pregnant and just riding in the car for even just 2 hours, my legs are instantly swollen and I'm uncomfortable. Managing kids in places that maybe aren't clean or safe. Putting kids to bed every night or every couple nights in a new environment. And just also financial strains from time to time of being like stressed out.
As far as kids go, when the kids were younger, I think one of the most difficult things was like, I'd be singing or whatever, and you'd be trying to hold a couple of kids at the same time. And we always had one of my sisters with me, almost always. We had one of my sisters with us to help out. But sometimes
they were
younger.
Almost every time. Not almost every time. I would say many times we did, but I have a lot of memories of wrestling babies with only one person, or somebody just got a dirty diaper and I can't go out to the van because Carl's on the stage.
It wasn't me, it was one of the kids.
Because Carl's on the stage with the kids and it's kind of like in a sketchy neighborhood and I wouldn't want to go out to the van to change a dirty diaper by myself anyway. So like there's a lot of technical challenges like that.
Yeah. So one of the, I think, very pivotal moments in our family career and missions right now is that we were about to go on one of our early trips, and maybe it was our first time crossing the country, which was going to be our longest, riskiest trip we've ever been on. And I think maybe Wesley was a baby.
So that was like 8 years ago.
Yeah, so we had three at the time. And Justice and Carly, our oldest, were learning how to memorize verses because I was trying to incorporate them into what we were doing. And I wanted them to have it down perfectly, you know, but I still needed to help them a lot. And you know, I wanted to be validated, like, because I'm calling people cold turkey. I'm calling rescue missions and churches and saying, hey, can we come minister? You don't know who I am. You know, and so I want everything to be really good so that I'm validated and people would be like, yes, we want you to come. Because I believed that I could do ministry. I believed in the gifts that God had given me. I had confidence in that. But at the same time, I was really scared of being rejected. And so I wanted the kids to be perfect at what they're going to do. And they weren't there yet. And our friend Scott Mullett, we were at a Bible study right before our trip, like home fellowship. And he said, make sure you use the kids. He said, because they had done prison ministry. And he said, like, that's the most impactful thing that we ever did, something to that effect. And that was the best advice ever for us as a family on mission, because the kids, he was absolutely right. It doesn't matter even when the kids get it wrong. I mean, I think if our kids got up there and sometimes they have, got goofed off or were throwing a fit or something like that, that's maybe not the best. But when they're doing their best and you're doing your best, people really are not that critical. And one of our friends put it, a young lady said that when she saw the kids do their piece, she said, all of a sudden now you're not just a guy with a guitar, you're a dad. And so that was a really big part of like incorporating them into that. But at the same time, there was always another younger one in the wings. So your job has been to be our band manager off stage.
But I'm happy doing that. I'm happy being a behind the scenes person. I mean, I don't mind being on the stage if I'm needed, but I prefer behind the scenes.
Do you enjoy it? Are you more at peace with it? I don't know if enjoyment is the right word that you would use, but like your role in that is not glamorous. It's not fun to be like, you know, managing.
All my roles are glamorous, Carl.
Well, that's true. Yes, that's true. I didn't mean anyway. You're making me step in it today. But the other day we were doing Christmas caroling downtown, and it's, you know, in the evening time. I'm a little hangry, and I like things to be clean and orderly anyway, which is tough when you have a big family.
But it's helpful for me.
Yes. I mean, I don't have any regrets about that, but it has its challenges. And I'm getting the stuff out of the van for the family to go downtown, getting out the enormous stroller that Susie likes and all these other things. And then Teresa, who had missed her nap, or she doesn't get a nap, but she was tired. She's carrying a couple of things in her hands and then her blanket. And I'm like, I don't want that blanket dragging on. So I start to pick it up, and Susie's like, Carl, that's kind of my way of keeping her, you know, at peace with this moment. And I think I'm much more clued into those kind of things that you're doing now than I was then. You have a technique for like minister. You minister to the kids while I'm ministering with them out, you know, away toward from our family. Our family is kind of pouring out to whatever community we're ministering to at that moment. And then you're there like ministering to the kids and remembering, hey, they're hungry. We should go do this fun thing. I mean,
basically,
I try to
think of this. Good mom. Thanks, Carl.
Yes, yes. Well, this is true. But it's important to be aware of those roles like that. It's all important for me to be aware that that's happening. I always try to think in terms of what, you know, if I was without you, how do I need to treat the kids? Because you do balance me out.
Right.
But
and you balance me out as well. So yeah, I do think like, I do try to, think about what you would do in situations sometimes, because
yeah.
I know sometimes I'm a softie. So.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, having lost a parent and I've seen a lot of other people, when there's a death in a family, it shakes up the chemistry of the family and there's no way you can get around that. But it's important to be aware of the roles that we're playing in our family so that we know to the best extent that we can what's going to be lacking in our kids' lives, you know, or even in our lives if someone's missing, you know?
Yeah.
So those things are just matters of keeping peace and joy as we do this mission together. So being less stressed has made you you able to enjoy doing what we do more.
Yeah.
What is the key to becoming less stressed for you? And does it have anything to do with what I do?
Well, I mean, being less stressed for me, I am less stressed as I embrace my role, as I slip into my role more, and I'm just like, I am the mom, I am the behind the scenes, I am the band manager. When it comes to, I think in the beginning when we started traveling, I tried to like help Carl plot our trip or make phone calls to churches or this and that, and I just kind of made it more complicated because it's like I was
too many cooks in the kitchen.
Too many cooks in the kitchen. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was like not a direct line. It'd be better if Carl just was the main contact. So it's like A to B instead of A to B to C. You know. So I'm just really hands off in the music and the packing for any of the music. I can't keep track of it. I can't keep track of our schedule. At least not in the beginning. And so I just focus on just being a mom.
And I've come to accept, too, that, like, that Susie doesn't really play, that you don't really play a musical role in the band, except once in a while. Maybe we'll have one song or something like that, and that's fine, you know, just learning the roles. Because peace is really a big goal of mine in this process, because if our kids don't like their life, if they don't like what we're doing, if they don't like who we are, they're going to be gone as soon as possible, and they're likely going to reject the faith. And, you know, we want them to look back and say, what we had was good.
Yeah. And we were cared for, and we were seen, and we were listened to.
We were heard, yeah.
I forgot what else I was going to say, but yeah.
And I don't know that I know I haven't always done a good job on those things. I'm going to need grace for my kids and because I'm learning as we go. And there are so many mistakes we can make. I mean, it would be easier if we just stayed home and never did these crazy road trips, took our kids to baseball games and whatever, you know, to their friend's house. It seems like that might be easier to be, you know, like a parent where the kids say, oh, we love what our parents gave us. They were always there for us. They always met our needs. All those kinds of things. And yet I do believe that one of our needs, one of their needs, is to have a missional mindset, to realize that life isn't just about what you want. Part of what you want, even if you don't realize it, is to be useful to God. You know, like kids, at some point, they don't actually want you to do everything. And you pointed this out to me, too. Like, kids, when you teach them music, fine, they played what you taught them. But what they like better is to show you what they taught themselves. At some point, when we're growing up, we want to be able to provide something for the
world.
Provide.
Yeah, provide and impress and surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And our relationship to God the Father is like that, that we weren't made to just soak things up. We were made to be of service. You know, we are made to build and create and to be redemptive.
And I think our kids have gotten a lot of like firsthand life lessons about drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And why you wouldn't want to partake in that.
Yeah, well, they've been to the places where they've seen how people's lives have been wrecked.
Yeah.
And, you know, rescue missions, it's a family joke, but we know that some of our kids have particular aversions to rescue missions because of the way that many of them smell, or just from cleaners and...
Yeah, like, yeah, not that they're... We haven't really been to gross rescue missions, but, like, just the...
it's unstable.
The institutionalized, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like the smell of the strong smell of bleach and cleaners, mm-hmm. and
mothballs or whatever.
Yeah, and then the people that come in and smell like pot and cigarettes and mm-hmm. you know, other gross things.
And so, we still do it. Yeah, I mean, we still go to these places because we believe in the ministry, but we also allow our kids to express the fact that they don't like it.
Yeah, and, I mean,
you know.
Yeah, exactly. Like the ministries we've been to, like there's nothing to complain about. Like they're doing good work, mm-hmm. and I want them to use a lot of bleach to clean their floors.
Yeah,
but they're not places where kids want to be and hang out.
Right,
you know?
They're not fun.
Yeah,
yeah,
and they just gotten a lot of firsthand experience, and we don't usually try to hide that sort of stuff from mm-hmm. our kids, unless it's kind of like maybe something
defiling,
yeah,
or something
defiling
like that.
Or yeah. Sexually explicit. We would mm-hmm. that's when we would try to hide things from them so they're not scarred, but we've never really bumped into anything too bad.
But doing these things, people, the kids ask great questions. They're just like, why was that person, you know, talking to themselves, or you know, and we can talk to them about, you know, usually we try to point out the different ways people can be abused and neglected,
yeah,
and how all that stuff can lead to lead to mental problems, lead to depression and addiction and all that kind of stuff. And I think the result has been that our kids are aware of the world, and also I hope have a certain compassion.
Yeah, kind of. I would hope that our kids from these experiences would learn to understand people and understand that this person over here in the corner who's talking to himself and is dressed oddly and, you know, has all these like quirks and problems and maybe they come off as weird and even scary to the kids. Like, you know, helping them understand like Jesus can help this person, because mm-hmm. this person didn't just want to grow up and be like that. Like, kids don't look at scary, weird people and think, I want to be like that when I grow up.
Right.
They become that from a lot of bad and sad things.
Oh, I try to point out that what we're doing as a family ministry is part of their healing, part of helping them. You know, especially just seeing a family. For a lot of people, they've just never seen a whole family functioning well. And of course, they're only seeing us in a glimpse of time, but I'm hoping and praying that that glimpse will give them a glimpse into a reality that is possible. Along with, of course, in preaching the gospel and offering truth, we're giving them the keys to freedom.
Yeah.
And
Oh, yeah, I remember what I wanted to say earlier, too. This is kind of like going backwards a little bit. But when we want our kids to enjoy these trips in a sense of like they feel cared for, they feel mm-hmm. heard, they're not being pushed aside. Because there have been many moments where it's like all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's time for the program to start. Okay, Daddy's on stage. Do you know what you're going to play? Do you know what you're going to play? Do you know what song? Okay, you sit still, you sit still, you sit still. And in the middle of doing that, someone got left out or someone got their feelings hurt. And maybe Carl or I were kind of like having an argument with one of them. And we don't want to be, the last thing we want to be is hypocrites mm-hmm. on the stage, especially when you like get up there. It just feels really gross to be arguing with someone and then like getting up on the stage and talking about forgiveness and
the love of God.
Yeah, yeah. And you feel like maybe your child did not experience the love of God for the past hour or 30 minutes or however long. And that is always a very, this is a very disgruntling feeling as a parent to feel like you're just really failing your kid who's hurting here in the front row while you're trying to serve this room full of strangers.
Mm-hmm. And to me, I think that that's one of the things, though, about doing ministry is, as long as we stay honest with ourselves, is that we, you know, we might preach a good sermon and then go, am I actually doing this? Or am I just talking, mm-hmm. telling other people to do it? And
yeah,
keeps you in check. One of the things that I've had to learn is to embrace making life good for my family as part of my calling. Because, I mean, I would go, I'd wear myself out. I'd go to, you know, I enjoy what we do. You know, I enjoy work. and I could be a workaholic, and including in ministry. And my kids need me to slow down sometimes and just have fun. And you do too. And honestly, I do too. I just have a hard time allowing myself to do that. And I know to some extent I'm bequeathing that to my kids, like the sense of there's something to do, you know, use your time, don't waste your time. And I struggle with that because it's not all bad. You know, it's, it mm-hmm. is, you know, yeah. Make the most of your time because mm-hmm. the days are evil. And I honestly find joy in making the most of my time. Yet being married to you, and you being in my kids, when the reason one of the reasons I married you is because you're not like me, because you have qualities that I lack.
Feminine qualities that don't include yes. a beard.
I hopefully thankfully. Lack a lot of feminine hopefully qualities, ever. But, yeah, so I think one of the things for me that's made our traveling better is learning to recognize just the fact that I married you for things that I don't have. And one of the main things that I need to do is get out of my own way and let you do what you're good at, including, and this applies to some and all of our kids in varying degrees, because some of them share more of my personality, some of them share more of your personality, and of course it's a mix of all of it, but I need to get out of their way sometimes and let them bloom, you know, the things that they're good at, mm-hmm. and stuff. Mission life as a family is stressful at times. It's tiring, but I think, and maybe you can let me know if you agree with this, Susie, but I think it doesn't really matter what you're doing. If you're a big family, life is tiring and at times stressful. And it's not really, sometimes it's how much you're doing, but really I think it's more a matter of what you're believing as far as where stress comes from.
Oh, yeah, what you're believing, which would be a good segue into finances, because there are all kinds of statistics that talk about like the top three or five things that marriages break up over or people have disagreements over or whatever. And one of them's always finances. And
the number one one, yeah, actually.
Yeah. And I forgot what you just said, but it was about stress.
Oh, about what you believe. The source of stress is not really...
Oh, yeah.
It's well, about what you believe yeah. more than anything.
Yeah, and you've told me many times, which I do think about, and sometimes I'm annoyed at them, and sometimes I use them as tools, but a lot of times when we're stressed out, it's because we are tired or hungry or overwhelmed or we're too busy, or what it boils down to is that we feel like our needs aren't going to be met. We mm-hmm. feel like we're not going to be cared for.
We aren't being cared for.
Right, yeah, and that presently. Is a, that's fear. And you shouldn't live your life or be motivated by fear. So we're motivated by maybe the surface things are like hunger and lack of sleep and a busy schedule. But underneath that, we feel like our needs aren't going to be met. Mm. And so we're afraid that people aren't going to take care of us. They're not loving us. And fear is motivating our life.
Yeah. And really, it is ultimately any resentment about that goes back to God. That it's like,
right.
ultimately, God is failing me. That's what we're
right.
we're believing.
We're and, afraid
yeah.
that God is failing.
So there was one really important part in our journey. We were doing a lot of traveling at the time. We were getting ready for another trip. and we're like 48 hours from leaving on a big trip, and the stress levels are rising. And we had been traveling enough at that point that I noticed a pattern. And I was like, okay, what is happening right now? Why is it that here we're getting ready to go on a trip again? We were excited last week. Now we're stressed out, and there's this, you can smell resentment in the air. And we had a lot to do, a lot to pack. But I just said to Susie, like, let's sit down on the couch. And I said, what are you thinking? What is stressing you out? And I explained to her what was stressing me out. And at the end of that conversation, which we felt like we didn't have time for, we really identified several different lies that we both believed and that were causing stress. But also the understanding what each other's needs are. Through that conversation, I understood more of what you needed in a trip to be comfortable, you know, like the kind of how to, like, you prepare kids, like, this is what's going to happen. We're going to go here, we're going to go do this, and then we're going to do this, you know, and having that game plan helps them mentally adjust. We need those kind of things too, you know, of just saying, like, hey, when you say this, this is how it makes me feel. When you act this way, this is the kind of pressure I feel. And just being honest about those kind of things, about what's motivating us and stuff.
When really I helps. Say, Carl, I need to go to the store because I need to get one thing, you say...
Is it chocolate?
You say, well, I'll give you a $20 limit. And I say, that's not enough. And you say, yeah, it is. And then I say, no, it really isn't enough because I actually need to get more than one thing. And you say, yeah, I knew that all along. And I say, how dare you? I know what our family needs. And you say, yeah, I do too. And we don't need that. And, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. And in those conversations, you have to just decide, discern which one of you is believing, is acting in fear. Because, I mean, fear is present everywhere. All the time. And so, you know, like it can come up in so many different settings. And I think for me anyway, just recognizing, okay, why am I holding on to this? You know, why am I holding on to the funds? Once I recognize that I'm acting in fear, then like my dad always said, fear and faith can't exist in the same place at the same time. Maybe he didn't say that, but he said something like that. I think it was John Short, a missionary, who said, fear and faith cannot abide in the same heart at the same time. Hmm. So we're doing a trip this January. We're going across the country. We're going to meet some of you. We're going to be capturing testimonies. We're going to have some great interviews. We're going to be singing at teen challenges and churches and homes. And we're looking forward to doing this. And, you know, when we do it, I oftentimes think, there's so much audacity in saying, hey, we're going to go across the country. People are going to invest in us to preach the gospel. And I just think, well, what's special about us? You know what? These are some of the thoughts that go in my head. Like, what's special about you? Why they can preach the gospel? Why do they need you to come? Why do you, you know, and I don't always have a good answer for that, except that I believe that God has called us to this, for one. But also that many times we simply don't preach the gospel, even though we could. And sometimes being intentional and going outside of your hometown on a mission, you know this is why we came out, to be specifically for this purpose. And it just helps you
It's just like, it's like a time set aside for this is what we're doing, and it helps you stay focused.
Mm-hmm. It's an act of faith too, just to say, like, the reason we're being inconvenient, the reason we're inconveniencing our own life, is because we believe that Jesus has called us to this, and that when you preach the gospel, when you sing the praises of Jesus, that people are changed. I guess it's really no different than laying hands on somebody and praying for them, you know, like Jesus knows their needs and he can answer their needs already. But he's made the world in such a way that when we stretch out our hands and say those words, pray for them, then things change. So there's like a cause and effect for the world that we live in. So that's what we're going to do. Are you looking forward to this trip?
Yes.
Me too. Hope that you guys will join us on this channel as well as on our Telegram channel and through the podcast as we journey across the country praying that Jesus would revive us. And he will. He is already because we're going. And I hope that you will go somewhere today intentionally on mission for Jesus, because the world needs, how will they preach? How will they go without a preacher? No, wait, how will they go unless they're sent? How will they hear without a preacher? And so be the voice. Well, thanks for taking time out of your busy day, Susie, to be with me and go on these mission trips with me.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Well, if you are enjoying our podcast, please take a minute to rate and review it in whatever podcast app you use. Don't forget to subscribe and all that good stuff. Check out the links below today's show notes so that you can join us on our Telegram channel. Share your thoughts, your questions with us. You will also share our journey as we bring reconciliation and revival through worship and evangelism and healing prayer across the nation. So you can be part of that when you join our Telegram channel. You can actually become part of helping us do that. So take a minute to do it, and we will see you next time. God bless.